You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Coach Jen in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kent, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 4th, episode 3965, Good Morning Horse World.
Welcome back, Mary. For the uninitiated, Mary is here the second Thursday of every month, and we sit down and chit-chat. Oh, that's you're not here the second Thursday. You're here the first Thursday of every month.
The first Thursday, yeah.
First Thursday of every month. And we sit down and chit-chat about all things horse training. And as an extra special bonus this month, we're going to chat with Doug Havens about Mustangs and Mustang Academy. Woohoo!
Yay!
What have you been up to, Mary, since we've chatted last month?
I just got back from a clinic near Portland, Oregon, in Canby, Oregon, actually. And I got to see a seal. I was very in the wild. I've never seen a seal in the wild before. And that's what I took away from that 3-day intensive clinic is I got to see a seal. clinic was awesome too.
Isn't that funny how seeing animals in the wild just as chance? Oh, there's one. It's such a thrill compared to you go to a wildlife refuge or a zoo of some type and you see them there. It's a very different emotional experience, isn't it?
Yes. Oh my gosh. It was very cool. And it's funny because, you know, obviously in Texas, way away from the coast, I'm not used to seeing it. And I'm sure the folks living on the coast out in Oregon are like, yeah, it's a seal. Big deal. And I'm like, no,
it's a seal. Yeah, I can totally commiserate with that. Yeah, same thing happens to us. We see a bald eagle flying by, and it's so exciting. Oh my gosh! But you see a bald eagle in a sanctuary. We have a lot of that down here because we have a lot of bald eagles. And when they're injured, people will bring them in, and you know, broken wing, he can't ever fly again. He ends up hanging out at the refuge for the rest of his life. It's like, oh, that's cool, beautiful, majestic bird. Glad he's here, living a healthy, happy life. But it's a very different emotional process that happens versus the one that's out there doing his eagle thing. Yeah, pretty cool. And speaking of doing their thing and exciting emotional responses, this is where we do Mary's training tip every month. And Mary always has some interesting and thoughtful training tip for us. And it's always inspired by some sometimes dramatic and sometimes goofy thing that happened in her life. So what's your tip and how was it inspired?
But I'm gearing up for, I'm going to show Remy at the Paint Horse World Show in Fort Worth at the end of this month. And he is not a paint, even though he's a pinto. But there's this ranching triple crown challenge that's open to all breeds that's put on by the World Show. And the challenge that I set out for myself is, okay, I want to ride him on a completely loose rein and do the pattern. Just, you know, I feel like I've been hanging on to the bridle just a little bit too much. And I've ridden Remy on a loose rein plenty of times, but I've been so concentrated on, you know, getting him collected and doing all the maneuvers that I don't think I've let go of the reins enough. And so yesterday I rode him out in the pasture and I'm like, I'm just going to steer him around with my legs. And that was a really interesting adventure because he just like wiggled around all over the place. It's like I gave him his head and he didn't know where to go. And so that kind of showed me, I've been hanging on to my horse a little too much and helping him out just a little too much. And I think what loose rein riding is very important for green horses in the beginning when they don't understand a lot of cues and you don't really want to be pulling on them and giving them mixed signals. But it's also important with your horse that you've been riding for a while, because it shows you what's really there. And I think if you want a really finely tuned horse, a horse that's going to be competitive, especially in the Western events, or a horse that's just a delight to ride, the goal should be to minimize your cues as much as possible. And so pitching the reins away is a really good thing to try next time. If you do it, does your horse speed up? Do they take off running? If so, that's something we need to fix, because the horse should not just freak out because he's been given some slack and take off. And in Remy's case, where he was just really dependent on me telling him where to go every step of the way, I pitched him away. I pitched those reins away, and he just was like, well, where do I go? Left? Right? I don't know. So that just showed me, okay, I need to give him a little bit more agency and responsibility over his feet. So one of the things that you can do to get this working for you, and what I did with Remy, it's perfect out in the pasture, is I wanted him to go straight until I told him to do something else. Obviously, that should be kind of a default thing. So I pitched him away, and he goes left and right, and he threw his hips this way and that way and just not sure what to do. So I just pointed him to a spot across the pasture, and I rode to it, and I kept my reins loose. The only thing I did with my hands was keep his nose on the target that I had set out before us. And if you practice that, you go from one target to the next target. When you get to that spot, I like to let them rest for a few minutes, and so they get a little bonus for having made it all the way there. And then I turn around and I pick another spot, or a tree or a bush or a fence post across the pasture, and I ride straight to that. And I'm not trying to collect them or do anything fancy. I'm just riding straight to that point. And if you do this enough, you practice this for like 20 minutes, you'll find that the horse starts to line themselves out and get a little bit more confident on riding on that loose rein.
Dun, dun, dun. So for someone who's really struggling with it, either because the horse gets really lost and doesn't know what to do, or for a rider who feels really uncomfortable doing this process, will it have the same benefit if you do it in smaller increments? For example, I might spend a lot of my time riding in an arena. That's what I have available. That's what I'm comfortable with. This, that's what we do. Will spending more time, I'm going to use an English term, on the buckle, practice riding in a straight line from point A to point B, for example, across the diagonal, if you ride in a dressage arena a lot, on the buckle, and do that 5 or 6 or 7 times during a ride, or 4 or 5 times in a row, interspersed with 120-meter circle on contact, can that have the same benefit to do it that way, so that it's not, oh my gosh, I can't manage to trot loose on a long rein across a pasture. That's too much at one time.
Yes, absolutely. And the arena provides a lot of great, you know, structure for, you can ride on a loose rein and see, will my horse stay on the rail? If I put my horse on the rail on a loose rein and I'm not holding him there with my hands and my legs, will he stay on the rail? And if not, that's a little thing to practice, where you give your horse a job. I'm going to put you on the rail. Your job is to stay on the rail until I tell you to do something else. And you don't find out whether your horse is able to stay on the rail until you give him some rein. So you can go around the rail. You could go across the diagonal, like you said. You could go from one end of the arena to the other. So you could do that post-to-post exercise in the arena just as easily. Go across the short side of the arena, the long side. The goal is that the horse should stay between your legs and, you know, just kind of default, I'm going to go straight until you tell me to do something else. And when you get that straightness and that forwardness without building speed, you'll find that when you're ready to pick up your reins again, you've got a horse that's way easier to collect and round, and because you've fixed that problem with the gas pedal, where the horse is just kind of going all over the place and speeding up and slowing down. Once you get a good default, like I go down to the buckle, and that horse just, you know, he's just going to go along at his speed, at the same speed, until you tell him to do something else, it becomes much easier to ride him everywhere else.
And another added benefit to this exercise, I'm going to hearken back to something we talked about last month. This is a great way to check your own position. Because if you're riding crooked, or just as often, you're not just, quote, crooked, you're left, right, right, you're wobbling all over the place. And I see that a lot with English riders, maybe because I just see a lot more English riders. But if you take those reins away, that they are not able to go in a straight line from A to B. So this is also a really great exercise for riders. Just going to pick up a trot on a long loose rein or on the buckle. Go from A to B in a straight line. And if the horse is wandering left, right, left, right, left, right, your position is probably telling him to do that as much as allowing him to do that. If you're not straight, the horse isn't straight either.
Yeah. And that, you know, one of the things you can do to fix that that's quite easy is look where you're riding.
ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. If I put my, well, it's like when you're taking a jump, if you're looking down at the jump, all your energy and the horse's energy is going to kind of go down. Whereas if I'm looking through the jump to the next point I'm riding to on the horizon, all of a sudden, a lot of things fix themselves.
There you go. Eyes up. The number of times we've all seen photographs of riders and their head is straight, but if you look at their eyes are looking down at the horse's ears or their hands. Shame on all of us. I'm as guilty as the next guy. I look at my hands.
Oh, so am I.
Way too much. Way too much. And speaking of guilty as charged, are you guilty as charged of using inferior fly protection products for your horses? Stop that. And you're going to find out what you can use instead from our sponsor today, Farnham. This episode is brought to you by Farnham and Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control, a new fly spray for horses. Discover fly protection redefined with Endure Gold, made to annihilate flies, ticks, and mosquitoes with brand new EPA-approved ingredients never before seen in equine care. Endure Gold is backed by science and built for hard work, delivering fast knockdown and up to 14 days of fly protection. Add Endure Gold to your arsenal and upgrade your fly control rotation.
We have a gentleman that I met at Equine Affair in April, who Douglas Havens, who runs Havens Hideout Ranch in Pennsylvania. Yes, Pennsylvania. How are you this morning?
Doing good, thank you.
So for people who haven't met you yet, can you tell us a little bit about Havens Hideout Ranch and how you got it started?
We do horseback rides out here, horseback trail rides. We are about 15 miles from Pittsburgh, and there's not many trail riding places out amongst Pennsylvania or around Pittsburgh area. I moved out here from Colorado about 8 years ago. In Colorado, my family owned a cattle ranch. I've been around horses and cows mainly all my life. I've worked in rodeos for over 20 years, and I've done basically pretty much whatever you can think of with horses. We have done it one way or another, and I also train wild Mustangs.
So growing up on a cattle ranch and working with horses, was at any time, was there like a particular horse or a mentor or moment that set you on the path to training horses specifically?
Yes, we started working with Mustangs. My dad brought home a Mustang one time, and it was a Greenbroke Mustang from the prisons. We lived in Round Canyon City, Colorado, which is one of the big homes of BLM and the Mustangs. So my dad brought home a Mustang, and he just told my brother and I, hey, see what this thing will do. See what, you know, get on this horse. And so we got on them and started riding them around. And they're just a great horse to have out on the ranch or trails, or they're just a great horse. And so I started working with the Mustang some. And then there was a guy that I apprenticeshiped under for one summer. He trained roping horses and reining horses. So I apprenticeshiped under him. And so I went and took that to the Mustang and started playing around with them. And it just took. I was hooked on the Mustangs ever since.
They are very addicting. And I also find that training with the kind of reining performance horse, it just, they go hand in hand with Mustangs. They really adapt well to it. And since we're on the topic of Mustangs, I'd like to insert one of our listener questions in here. And it comes from one of our auditors, Jessica. And she asks, when you're looking at a pen of wild horses, if you're searching for like a potential one for yourself or for your program, is there something specifically that you're looking for?
Yeah, I look, of course, at the composition of the horse and how they interact with the other horses. I like to watch. Also, when I go pick out a Mustang from a holding facility, I will sit there for 20 minutes or so and we'll just watch the herd. And I watch how each Mustang interacts with the other Mustangs. I like to watch whether they push them out, whether they run up and bite them, or, you know, or they just stand alone, stuff like that. And I just like to watch them. And then I kind of get a feeling on the horse just by watching them about, you know, how they interact with the other horses, how they're, you know, where their eyes move to. Are they, you know, are they just focused on the herd, or are they focused out in, you know, out in the pasture, or, you know, their ears, how their ears will flex around the other horses and what they listen to. And so I like to watch them and just get a feeling of, you know, what that horse is thinking and what he looks like or looking at and what, you know, how he responds to other horses. And I choose my Mustangs from that.
So when you're watching these interactions happen, can you give me a couple of examples of behaviors or interactions that you would consider not desirable, and maybe a couple that you would consider desirable? Because we can watch all that, but not all of us have very good concept of what does it mean. So just a couple of really common ones that you would find, oh yeah, I like that one happening, and or no, I don't really care much for that one.
Okay. Yeah. So the Mustangs that I look for is that I like and what I find desirable in a Mustang is when they react to the other horses, whether they stand alone, because a Mustang that stands alone, he's going to be more of an alpha Mustang. So he's going to be, when you're working with them, they're going to be more, a little bit more independent, a little bit more harder to train. But when you take them out like on trails or whatever, they're more independent. They don't want to follow the herd and follow other horses. They like to go off, you know, on their own. So they're, depends on what you're looking for in a horse as well, what you're wanting to do with them, but they are more independent. So I look at how they stand with the other horses, whether they're standing in the center or they're standing off to the side. So I find horses, I like the more independent ones. I like the more ones that are going to stand there and just basically they'll watch the herd and they'll react with the other herd, with the other animals, but you'll see them standing off a little bit more to themselves. That I like the more independent Mustangs. Now, the other Mustangs, what I find, if you don't get that independent, then you get the followers. And now the followers are a little bit more easier, I find, to train. But the followers, you know, they'll just jump in. You know, you got 10 Mustangs running around in this pen area. They'll just jump in and run with everybody else. So kind of just follow everybody else's lead, you know, and just kind of run around with the other horses. Whereas the other, you know, the independent ones kind of stand off on their own. And then as they're watching, as you're watching their head movements and they're, you know, what they're paying attention to, I find the more independent ones like to look out, take in overall everything, not just what's going on inside that pen, but they kind of look out a little bit more, you know, to what, you know, they're searching more out above, out around what everybody else is doing. Whereas the followers, they kind of will stand or they'll just kind of follow along and you see their heads kind of down and just running with the herd, just running around with the herd. And so I just, myself, I particularly like the independent ones.
My favorite are the followers. I like the ones that are just looking for a friend. Yep. I can get along with those guys all day.
I like a challenge.
Yeah, I do not anymore. But the ones that are the most difficult to start end up being really fun a couple years down the road or a couple months down the road. And that's where you get your athletic superstars. And
you're right.
My speed is my Mustang Remy. We do get outrun by cows every single time, but he's super mellow and quiet and he only needs like a 5-minute workout. And that's plenty of training for him. And he's the same guy every day. Those are my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing to, if you just would set in and just, like I said, I like to just to watch them for like 20 minutes or some and just watch how Mustangs interact with each other. And I mean, horses in general, but Mustangs have that camaraderie, if you will. Like when I introduce a new Mustang to my horseback or to my, you know, my trail riding horses, it's really interesting to see. I have 4 Mustangs and I have 3 quarter horses, and it's really interesting to see the Mustangs will automatically gravitate together and they'll hang out together where the quarter horses are kind of out on the other side. And it's really interesting to watch that.
Yeah. It's almost like you've put, like if it was people and, you know, you're at an airport or somewhere and you've got people of different nationalities, you know, you're more likely to hang with the people who speak your language.
Right.
And yeah,
it's amazing of that horses know, you know, that they can communicate that to each other. You know, it's really interesting to watch.
And so you're going to take all of this knowledge that you've gained with Mustangs and you're starting what looks like a pretty intensive training academy next year.
Yes.
And what inspired you to create that?
Well, so in Pennsylvania, there's not many people that have Mustangs. So I kind of stand out with my Mustangs that I get, because I brought out from Colorado, and then throughout the years I've got a couple Mustangs and trained them, and so I started using them in my trail riding business, and people are like, oh my gosh, this was a wild Mustang, I can't believe I'm riding them. And so throughout that, people ask me, well, how do you train a wild Mustang? And so I start talking to them about it. Well, then I ended up getting another Mustang. And of course, everybody's interested because they out in Pennsylvania, you don't really see wild Mustangs. So people started coming out, hanging out and asking me when I'm going to train and watching me. So with that, I started an apprenticeship program where I take 2 people and I train them, or I teach them how to train a wild Mustang, and they work with me in order, you know, in training these Mustangs. Well, I have 9 people on a wait list for doing the apprenticeship program. So I started thinking, how can I get all these people to training? So I sat down and I decided to, I kind of have my own program that I'm working on. It's a mixture of a bunch of training and understanding Mustangs. And I call it natural instinct training. And I go on a Mustang on the natural instinct of horses, which you learn a lot when you start working with Mustangs. And so I started, so I just put together my own syllabus and just kind of writing things down. And that's how I came up with the academy.
And what kind of student is it designed for? Is it going to work with total beginners? Do you need to have any kind of experience? Are you teaching people how to become professional trainers?
Basically beginners, because like I said, there's not many people out here that have ever seen a wild Mustang, let alone worked with training them. And a wild Mustang is a little bit different to work than a barn-raised horse. A barn-raised horse has been touched, petted, and messed with since day one, since they're born. Whereas a wild Mustang, they consider you, you are a predator, and they, consider you dangerous at the time because you're a natural predator to the Mustang. It's basically all new people, or if you have training experience, I tell people, this is a little bit different than working with other horses. So it's almost like starting over in some aspects of, training with the Mustangs. Now, of course, if you have prior training, knowledge of horses, then it's not necessarily beginning, but there is a little bit of a difference with working them. So we have it set up as a 4-month program. You take an untouched horse and we take them all the way through to riding them. It's 3 days a week, 4 hours a day. And it's set up, I got it set up like a college course. And I'm working on trying to get it accredited through the Department of Education. So I'm working on that aspect. I'm doing what they like to see to get credited for, regular school academies, stuff like that. So I'm working on that aspect now.
Very cool. Final question. Training Mustangs, do you think training a wild horse changes the person as much as it changes the horse?
It does. You learn a whole lot about horses that you haven't, Mustangs, they will show you different things like fight or flight, the natural instincts of horses' defense mechanism. But in barn-raised horses, they don't have it that much because they're used to being petted and touched the whole, throughout their whole life. Whereas Mustangs, it's a big noticeable thing because, they want to run from you. They don't want to be around you. And then if you get them in a certain area, then they want to fight you, So the fight or flight is very, very much prevalent in Mustangs compared to barn-raised horses. So you learn a lot in general of horses, but you also learn a lot in general yourself because you learn about human traits as well. Patience. You've got to have patience when you're working with any horse, but Mustangs as well. Mustangs, you just don't show them something and they're like, oh, hey, I got that. And then they do it, And one time, you'll show them, they'll do it 2 or 3 times that day. And the next day, forget it. It's a whole new ballgame. They won't, And so you learn patience. Plus, as you're working the Mustang, like I said, they'll show you, trying to figure out the best way to explain it. They show you what you can actually see human traits. I don't know if it makes sense. You can actually show human traits in with the Mustangs, patience, how friendship starts. Once you gain the trust and respect of a Mustang, that horse, he'll do almost anything for you. And all horses are like that, but Mustangs, it seems like they have a better understanding of that. So as you're working that Mustang, trying to gain their respect and trust and friendship, you realize you do a lot of the same stuff when you're, you go to a gym, you start talking to people, you got to gain their trust and respect in order to become good friends with them. And I don't know if that makes sense, but it's, you actually see a lot of a lot of that trait. And, you know, it, once you sit down and realize it, you got to realize it. And I don't know if it made sense or not.
Yeah. I think for me, you realize that. So when you're interacting with other people, a lot of people tend to just kind of absorb the things that happen to them. You know, we're polite and in spite of someone maybe being rude or offensive. Yeah. And so you don't always, you know, and you're surrounded by your friends and family who are supportive. And so you don't, right, you don't always know exactly how your actions are reverberating throughout the world. And a Mustang is going to strip all of that bare. And right, every little micro movement you do, they are going to react to it in some way. And you realize, oh my gosh, I'm making a huge impact on this creature. And you right, really have to become more trustworthy and become more consistent and more gentle yet firm when you need to be. And I think all horse trainers, I think most would agree with me that we kind of some of that bleeds into your real world life, and you carry that back into the world when you're interacting with people. Because I think, you know, Mustangs, they're not going to cover up for your
right, cause. Exactly. They're raw. Their emotions yes, are raw. Their everything
they're
is right
to
there.
Survive.
Yeah. They're there to survive. They're there to, you're absolutely right. They're there to survive. They're not going to sugarcoat anything. They're going to show you the real them. And in that, in regards, you know, I'm going to show them the real me, because that's the only way they're going to respond to me, you know? And people, you know, a lot of times people will sugarcoat themselves and make everything hunky dory when, you know, you gotta, you know, nobody's life's perfect. So you gotta be, I like the rawness of the Mustang.
Yes. And a Mustang can see right through,
yes,
you know, I've got a smile on my face, but a mind of a predator. They can see right through all that crap. And so you have
right,
to actually become that person who wants the best for them and who is trustworthy. And, you know, you can't cover it up. You can't trick a Mustang.
Exactly. Yes.
Very cool. And when does this start and how can people apply?
It starts in February. This coming February, we're going to start with a Mustang. I know it's weird time to start, but we figure with all the holidays and that, because once you start working with a Mustang, you don't want to take a whole lot of time off. So yeah, February will take us into the summertime and to work with the Mustang. And you can just get a hold of me through Haven's Hideout Ranch or Haven's Hideout Wild Mustang Training Academy.
Hi, this is Gina Moronic from Wisconsin, and I am an official Horse Radio Network auditor, something I'm really proud to do and to be a part of in a small way, because it's something that I get a lot of information from. The Horse Radio Network and the convenience of the downloadable podcasts means that I can improve my horsemanship skills, my riding skills, or just really enjoy listening to friendly, informative programming whenever I'm driving to work or working on chores or at the barn even. So I hope you find it as enjoyable as I do. If you do, go to horseradionetwork.com and click on the banner to become a Horse Radio Network auditor. For as little as $1 a month, you can be involved in this great thing too and keep it going. Thanks.
And what is our first listener question today, Mary?
Our first listener question is from Shannon, and it is, how do you teach a horse to tie? I have a fairly new off-the-track thoroughbred, and I'm afraid to hard tie him because I don't want him pulling back and not sure where to start to prevent it from happening. I have two others, and they're not very good about tying and have pulled back several times and broken halters, cross ties, etc., etc., and I can't ever leave them tied anywhere. I don't want to make the same mistakes with this new guy. Great question. And yes, it is very difficult if you have a horse you can't tie anywhere. So I would say if you follow a good groundwork program, that's a start, because part of what we're doing in our groundwork is we're getting the horse to give to pressure. You know, I'm teaching the horse to give to my lead rope aids. And when he feels, you know, if I pick up my hand and point the direction I want him to go, he's going to feel that halter kind of go a little snug on his face. And we teach him to go forward into the, you know, to give to the pressure rather than to pull back. So that's the very start. When I tie mine, if you can at all set this up, when I tie mine for the first time, I usually do it in my arena. I have tie spots available in the arena, and I do it after a groundwork or riding session for about 5 minutes. So you already have the horse thinking, you have the horse, he's a little tired, probably wants to have a little break, and you have a spot that it's soft footing. You know, it's not like a cross tie stall or something with concrete and all sorts of equipment around. So it's less scary and less dangerous if he does pull back. And then there's a number of different safety tying devices out there. The two that I really like the blocker tie ring. That is probably hands down the number one training tool people use to teach their horses to tie. There's the blocker tie ring, and I think a couple of other companies have made what I would call dupes. And I think it comes with instructions on how to use it. But essentially, you want to use a long lead rope, like a 14-foot lead rope is great, at least 10 feet long. And you string it up, and it gives to the horse if they get scared. And as long as you use a long enough lead rope that at the end of the spook that, you know, the horse is, there's still lead rope left in the tie ring, the horse is still tied at the end of the day. And all you're doing to that horse is when he goes to that like really over threshold place where he's like, I have to escape. When he pulls that slack, it calms them. There's something about it. It calms them immediately. And usually you use that on them a few times. And even with your horses that are pulling back, this has been used to fix horses that pull back. And it's got a few settings. So once your horse, like I had a gelding who was like, oh, I can just pull the lead rope out whenever I want and go graze. So you don't want to use it. I didn't use it on the easiest setting with him. It's got three different tension settings with the third being, this is pretty much your horse is tied. And you can put these on your trailers, in your trailers. You can take them with you to shows. But I find that once my horse is comfortable standing on a tie ring, this one of these safety tie ring devices, then it's a very easy transition to hard tying them. So that would be what I would look into is blocker tie ring, good groundwork program, and then begin tying for short sessions in very safe places and build duration to where you can tie them longer and longer and longer supervised. And just practice makes perfect.
There you go. Practice, practice, practice. And yeah, it can be pretty doggone intimidating because when a horse that is not comfortable being hard tied, when they go into panic mode, watching that can be pretty terrifying. Well, it's beyond, scary. You know, the potential injury. It's, yeah, I get that. Totally. Well, we're going to take a really quick break here and hear from another one of our important sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to have another question from a listener.
Want to reach a passionate, engaged audience of horse lovers? The Horse Radio Network, with thousands of listeners worldwide, offers unique sponsorship opportunities to connect your brand with horse owners, riders, and enthusiasts. Over 90% of our listeners have bought a product from a HRN ad in the past year. Partner with HRN and take your brand to the next level. Visit www.horseradionetwork.com/advertise today.
Interesting, fascinating stuff. Who is our next question from Mary?
Okay, I'm going to lump these two questions together because even though they are somewhat different questions, I would use the same thing to fix both issues. So we have one from Elizabeth, and she has a young horse started under saddle and wants to know the best way to get her more forward. She's great, but I'd like a little more marching out. Very good. And then we have Jolyn, who has a horse that lopes straight, went on the left lead, but the right lead, he dives hard to the right. He prefers to be on the right lead. Some of it is gait magnetism, I believe. Are there any exercises you can recommend for straightness? He's also extremely lazy, if that helps. That does help. So this is actually kind of all solved by the loose rein riding exercise that I mentioned earlier. So in either case, especially with a lazy horse, if I have a horse that is dumping on their shoulder like this one's doing to the right, and, you know, traveling a little crooked like that, and, you know, diving in on the circle, and, you know, or favors one lead pretty heavily, I like to do a lot of straight lines. I like to do this post-to-post exercise. You can do it in an arena, pasture, wherever. And the same thing for the young horse. And what makes this exercise work so well for the lazy horse or the horse who is not so forward is I pick a point, I ride to it. When I do this, at least to start this exercise, I keep it simple. All I want to do is I want my horse to travel straight in the gait that I put him in. So if it's trot, he needs to stay trotting. If it's canter, he needs to stay cantering. And this works better at the trot and the canter. And we need to ride all the way to that fence post. And all I do with my hands, I have both hands on the reins. I keep the reins loose. I'm not pulling back. I'm not trying to collect or bend or anything like that. I just use my hands to keep their nose on that point that I have picked for that horse. And when I get to the fence post, I actually ride them all the way to where their nose could touch the fence post. Now, some horses get a little scared when they get to the wall and they don't want to go all the way up. I'd let them stop where they feel comfortable, but I let them come to a stop at the target. I don't actually pull them up to a stop. Once they're there, this is where it's going to get your lazy horse moving straight and it's going to get your less forward horse moving straight. I give them a little break. If you are a positive reinforcement trainer, this would be also a good moment to click and treat. And I, you know, I just let them sit there for a second on a loose rein. And then I turn them around and I pick a new point. Maybe it's the corner of the arena. Maybe it's a fence post across the short side. If I'm outside, maybe it's a tree. Maybe it's, you know, it could be anything. And I just ride to that next point. And once they get to that next point, they get a break. They get a click and treat if that's what you're doing. And it gives the horse a target to go to, and it makes them think about, oh, I want to get to the other side of that fence, because every time I do, I get to have a little rest for my efforts. And I find that working on that before going back in and trying to lift the shoulder up and get more bend, or, you know, drive them into the bridle and all that stuff, I find that getting this exercise really good helps make my more advanced work much easier. And you'll know you're doing this right. And I'll practice this for like 20 minutes, you know, as long as the horse isn't too tired. But after a while, you'll find wherever you look, the horse just naturally starts to go. And where in the beginning, you had to really use your reins to keep them from going left and right, after a while, you could just put your hand down and that horse goes where your eyes go. It's like they're reading your mind. So you can do this, Jolyn, with your horse at the canter. Anytime I have a horse that drops the shoulder and falls hard to the right or the left in the canter, what I do first before trying to add inside bend or lift the shoulder with my rein or leg or anything like that is I will use both legs and drive them forward a little bit. So I learned this from riding reining horses. When you do as many circles as we do on the reining horses, they can tend to start falling in on the circle. And instead of trying to hold that horse back on the circle, I'll just kick him forward a little bit, because it's like centripetal force. The more forward the horse gets, the more they line out and get straight. And the horse also learns, if I fall in on that shoulder, I have to work a little harder and I don't really want to do that. So I'll just stay on the circle you put me on. So, and for Elizabeth, for your young horse, this is a very simple exercise, picking a point, writing to it, to get them just to learn to go where you're pointing. And you get more forward because your horse is going straighter. And if your horse is lazy, this works so good for them because they get that little break for that little bit of effort. And they're like, oh, okay, I'm really excited to get to the other side. And a really extreme example of this, someone told me, because I was asking kind of a similar question, how do I get more forward? They told me about an endurance rider who, as part of the horse's conditioning, she would ride to the top of this big hill or this kind of small mountain as part of their ride. And when they got to the top, she and her horse would split a peanut butter sandwich. And so... yeah. So that horse was like, I can't wait to go all the way to the top of this mountain. And he ended up getting the most beautiful extended trot because he was so excited to get to the top of the mountain. So
and have a peanut butter sandwich.
I know, right? And so give your horse an easy to reach objective and then reward him for that. And that's where you get your lazier horses to try harder for you. And that's where you get your young horses excited about moving out.
There we go. It's so interesting how in horse training, there are a few dozen essential, I'm going to call them exercises, that address so many training challenges.
And they're so basic. Of yeah. course, you know, there's a billion and one things you can do to get more forward and do with your legs. And but I find get this very simple one done first. And oftentimes yeah. that'll fix your problem or at least make it much yeah. easier.
Yeah. Perfect. That about wraps it up for today. So for people who want to have you come out and do a clinic, help them train their horse, maybe take a riding lesson from you, buy your artwork, et cetera, et cetera. Where can they find you online?
You can find me on Facebook, Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship, or online, marykitzmiller.com.
Perfect. And Glenn and Jamie will be back again tomorrow with more fun and hijinks. Until then, we'll see you next month, everybody.
All right. See ya.